The Matrix. The Wachowski brothers' first film since their overrated Bound is a science fiction thriller in the tradition of Blade Runner, 12 Monkeys, and Alex Proyas' Great Dark City. Sort of. The visual effects and cinematography are impressive, and the central concept is interesting. Unfortunately, the filmmaker's confused, clichéd, and illogical script, the all-too-familiar futuristic look, and several dead spots in the pacing killed the film's chance of being a wild ride. Brian Scuttle, Marietta, April 23rd, 1999. Okay.
Yeah, Brian, why don't you explain exactly
what that is. That was a review of The Matrix that I was happened to have published in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution when they were running their You Be the Critic section. It was that was basically how I started to write reviews. I would send them into the AJC, and they would every once in a while publish them. I had about 60 reviews published by the time they ended it. And
They're not doing that anymore.
And
you got some reviews in a couple of movie magazines also, didn't you?
I did get one little blurb in Film Comment magazine talking about their year-end thing. I might actually have another one, the upcoming one, about one of last year's movies. But anyway.
Why don't you introduce us?
Let's introduce us. I'm Brian Scuttle, the musical movie critic. This is Yahoo's with a microphone. To my right is Ronnie Haynes.
Greetings.
To my to his right is David Miles. And we're here to obviously discuss the Wachowski brothers' Matrix. The review you heard is obviously 4 years removed from when we are watching this now. And for the most part, I stand by those comments wholeheartedly. There are some things I would probably not take back, sort of reword. Overall, I'm still not a big fan of the movie. I don't think it does what other films have done better.
Hugo Weaving.
But Hugo Weaving right here, Elrond from Lord of the Rings, for those of you who don't know, is Agent Smith, and his speech patterns, I tried to mimic at the beginning when I was reading my review, not really doing a good job, at least as good of a job out of practice. Carrie Ann Moss from Memento.
Money Shot.
Money Shot's later.
There's a bunch of, there's a couple Money Shots in this movie.
That's the first Money Shot.
Yeah, Money Shot. Yeah.
The much imitated one.
Oh, yeah. There was actually a really good parody of that moment in a Scary Movie, I thought.
Yes, there was. Probably the best one they've done.
Yeah. With the adorable Anna Faris, but we won't go into how much I am in love with her. But anyway.
Wow.
Yeah.
It already starts.
Anna, if you're listening,
she's not. Certainly not to you.
You're adorable. Anyway, Carrie Ann Moss is quite adorable as well.
Carrie Ann Moss,
not your conventional Hollywood beauty.
No, she isn't.
But at the same time, probably one of the more compelling actresses to come out of the woodwork.
Yes,
a long time.
Anybody who saw her in Chris Nolan's Memento.
Memento,
that's her next best known thing.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, this film made her. Mm-hmm. I mean, Memento basically solidified that as a fan, for movie fans at least. Interesting thing, one of the movies I'm going to mention a lot, and mention in my review, Alex Proyas' Dark City, apparently. They filmed The Matrix in Australia. Sydney, Australia. Yeah. Dark City was also filmed in Australia. And some of these rooftops are actually from both movies.
Wow.
Are for both movies. So it's kind of interesting. Especially given that Dark City does sort of a similar
Virtual reality.
Virtual reality. What is real, what isn't.
Kind of
you
theme.
Know, sort of theme, not in a very different way from this.
I certainly do think this is one of the better treatments of the virtual reality genre.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, there's been plenty of them since. You know,
some crappy, some good.
Yeah. I mean, you know, one of the weaker treatments is probably like movies like Virtuosity and Johnny Mnemonic, and you know, there's just been some not so great ones. I mean, it's a delicate. They have to be mass appeal movies, or they're not gonna fly. And you know, virtual reality genre is either a mass appeal or not. You know.
Okay, but, Ron. I'm sorry. I've got to mention this. Okay, first off, why payphones? Why payphones? Why dial phones? Makes no sense to me.
I mean, it's kind of like, you know, I connect to the modem thing, connecting to the internet type thing.
Yeah, but there are other ways to do it that aren't as ridiculous, in my opinion. I mean, if they'd used cell phones, I probably would have accepted it a little more. But then again, I mean, you could get in and out of the Matrix rather easily.
And you have wireless.
Although you could still, you know, set up boundaries where, like, here you have to get to an exit point, and they have to find an exit point. You could still do that using a cell phone.
But I thought the whole point was the wire.
Okay.
The wire's the whole point.
Yeah. But actually, one of the interesting things is, in another movie, it sort of goes between real world and sort of, not virtual world, but more of an psychological, internal world is a cell. Very underrated movie with Jennifer Lopez and Vincent D'Onofrio.
Mm-hmm.
Where anybody who saw that, you know,
just freaked out right now.
I saw the trailer for that, and I was like, yeah, I may have to pass up on that one.
Yeah, that was pretty creepy.
They had a concept in there that I really liked a lot more in the phone thing, in that in the skin between your thumb and your index finger, they had like a little chip, and that anytime you felt like you couldn't handle being in the person's psyche, you would just sort of touch on that chip or something, and you could get back into the real world. I think that would have been a much cooler way of doing it, and a much more
interesting
way of doing it in this movie. And we've gone with the whole more technologically advanced.
I'm down with Brian. It's just in that movie, it was sort of a more controlled environment. I mean, they were going in there on purpose. You know, in this one, this is kind of like, okay, what...
That was like the inside of Vincent D'Onofrio's head, was it not?
Yeah, I mean, what is, you know, how do we connect? I mean, we need connections from the virtual world to the real world. what connects? You know, and that's why you have the wires. And it's not, you know, it's not just payphones, I mean, regular phones, too.
Oh, I know. That's one of the things that I've...
I really think they were just coming from the modem concept, jacking into the net through the modem type deal.
And I understand that. I mean, I do understand that, having seen this a couple of times recently, reacquainting myself with the movie in preparation for this. But it still bothers me. It still, I don't know, it just...
It doesn't really
work for me. I mean, it works for other people, and I get what you're saying about being jacked in, you know, jacking in, you know, going online or whatever you want, however you want to put it. That's how you get into the Matrix and all of that stuff. Or actually, how you get out of the Matrix. I don't know. It doesn't work for me. I have to say, when I saw this recently, the first part of this movie, like this section we're going into, the first part with Trinity, the introduction of Keanu Reeves' character, Neo.
That kind of freaked me out. I mean, I really wasn't following in the beginning myself.
Yeah.
Keanu Reeves from such movies as
Speed,
Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, and the brilliant follow-up, Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey. But, you know, I just wanted to...
And Giant Mnemonic.
Giant Mnemonic, another virtual reality genre-driven...
Keanu Reeves probably... his best performance was in Speed.
Yeah, I went to this club last week.
Yeah, I'm sure you did.
No, you didn't. I'm pretty sure you probably didn't.
Yeah, I mean, you know, from the beginning of the movie, you kind of get this almost Blade Satanistic thing going on.
Yeah.
You know, it kind of freaked me out. I didn't really know what kind of movie it was, you know, and then as the movie goes on, it kind of changes into this, you know, typical virtual reality type thing, and you can follow a little bit better. But the beginning of this movie was pretty weird. And I did the first fight, I thought it was paced pretty well.
Yeah. Admittedly, I do think the movie starts off really well. Mm. My problems are coming up, and I'll mention those, obviously. But this first part, when Neo starts getting lured into the idea of what is the Matrix, that part is compelling. Mm. That part is interesting. It sort of looks like the movie you were kind of expecting in the previews.
Right.
You know, sort of a mystery that has to be unraveled.
And they do a good job, I think, of kind of walking you through that mystery. Starting a mystery, and then kind of walking you through it.
At the beginning.
They kind of run out of mystery towards the end.
Well, the mystery of what is the Matrix is revealed 45 minutes into the movie.
Right.
I mean, beyond that, I mean, there's not much... any other twists in there would seem like, well, they're just trying to make it a bit too clever.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, talking about Keanu Reeves, he's sort of in the mode of his performance and Speed, where, I mean, it's not a great performance. They're not going to give him an Oscar for the performance.
You're not?
No. And it's unlikely you'll probably ever get one. But... You know, it's not one that you're going to hear people. It's not one you're going to hear people going, "Oh, he is absolutely brilliant. Mm-hmm. This is a powerhouse performance and all that." He does what is necessary for the performance, mm-hmm. what is necessary for the material. It's sort of like Speed. He has the confidence and, dare I say, charisma for the character and for the performance.
Yeah,
buy him in the role.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
That's all right. More or less done anyway.
In the commentary, they talked about this scene right here where he's getting chewed out. Mm-hmm. And they have the guys kind of in the background using squeegees on the windows and you know, kind of sort of a comic relief moment to the getting chewed out moment. I think that kind of worked pretty well.
Yeah. Well, it's also described in the commentary as a vintage Wachowski brother moment
The Wachowski brothers, who up until this point I think have only done two films.
They wrote
Bound in the Matrix.
Well, they wrote Sylvester Stallone and Assassins.
They co-wrote Assassins, which I actually think is one of the more underrated films, action films Stallone's done, of course directed by Richard Donner. But yeah, I thought that was a very underrated movie, actually. Yeah, I like that a lot. Wachowski brothers, only two writing and directing efforts up until now are Bound in the Matrix.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the Matrix sequels.
I like this sequence because it was one of the first times I was left a little breathless, I think.
Mm-hmm. I like this sequence.
It's really simple, but at the same time, it really gets your heart going, I think.
Yeah, I mean, this is something it kind of heightens the mystery, takes it kind of to the next level. He gets the cell phone.
You sort of get the idea of the paranoia and all that stuff. You know, paranoia of people coming after him, and you know, Big Brother's watching you, all that stuff.
Yeah, and first time you really whirling it off, talking right here, just amazing.
One questionable thing I heard, actually at this point in the commentary, was I believe it was the special effects supervisor saying that he thought Lawrence Fishburne's voice kicked ass compared to Darth Vader in Star Wars, and I was like, well, okay.
His voice worked for this movie.
It did. I mean, but he's not James Earl Jones.
No. I would talk about Lawrence Fishburne later. I'll talk about my qualms with his performance later in his character, actually. Not so much his performance, but his character.
Right.
This part, the first scene you see with Trinity, the introduction of Neo and all that stuff, all of this is really cool.
Yep.
Very compelling.
Very compelling. You're wondering, okay, what is the Matrix? When's he going to find out, And how is he going to get out of this one and all that stuff? For me, gets progressively less interesting as the movie goes on, but anyway.
This is not some of Keanu Reeves' best
acting. No, it isn't.
All the green in the background is very potential, or is very intentional.
Right.
Cinematography by Bill Pope, who's filming all three movies in the trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I was least impressed or more disappointed with in the movie was the fact that from a visual standpoint, at least when it came to the real world, the world of the Matrix, I didn't think they went far enough visually, in trying to create a new world. It didn't transport me into a new world the way movies like Blade Runner or Dark City or other movies do. Other movies of this, do. It's just, I understand this was supposed to be sort of a contemporary thing, you're not supposed to have flying cars and all that such, but it's supposed to be sort of the world as we know it right now, but it just really disappointed me that they didn't go for, trying to concoct a new look of the future. Of course, there hasn't been much of one since, the original Fritz Lang Metropolis, set the standard.
I guess their green shading of everything was kind of like their only thing.
Yeah, a little bit of a whitewash over the, it's kind of like a...
I don't know. They were trying to base it, make it look so real. They were trying to make it look, this is okay, average every day, and then boom, we're into the Matrix.
Yeah.
That it was a difficult balance to get. And the transportation sequences into the Matrix aren't as wow-ish as they could be. And,
especially if you're like me who's seen movies like Contact or 2001 where you have those type of sequences that just blow you away. Here they don't work.
It's pretty amazing, I think. Him talking to Neo.
This is another one of those touches where I hate to say it sort of felt kind of ridiculous. Why did they need to be talking like this? Is there any reason for the speech pattern being this way?
Are you talking about a speech pattern?
Yeah,
For
Agent Smith, for any of the agents, they sort of seem to have this.
I think it gives it sort of an interesting, quirky kind of quality to it.
I guess they're trying to do, these guys are not really human. They're supposed to be robots, almost.
Kind of talk like computers in a way. And it's like that they're like living computer programs almost.
Right.
And so they talk like that. It's like,
yeah.
It's touched on in this movie a little bit about the development of artificial intelligence. Mm-hmm. And you almost feel as if these guys are a product of that.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I really like about this movie is some of the transition sequences, like how they got into this one with the TVs, and you kind of go into the TV.
Yeah.
And there are a couple of other good transition sequences in there. Like, but that, I think this was probably the best.
I guess I can sort of feel that as far as the speech patterns, sort of based on the idea that they are computers and, computers don't necessarily talk like us yet. The AI just isn't that sophisticated.
This scene is very much Keanu Reeves right here.
Yeah, and how many of your friends have done that to you after watching this thing? I've got a couple of friends who have done that. To give you the finger.
Yeah, this is very much Keanu Reeves logic right here.
Yeah.
Right.
Now, in the commentary, the special effects guy, visual effects, I guess, guy mentioned that this effect, this blurring with his mouth closing up is probably one of the worst effects in the movie. And I tend to agree. I mean, like right here,
I think in the very beginning,
that's good. And then when he comes up against the wall, though.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's crap.
Yeah, you can kind of tell it's sort of,
that's like an old
yeah.
technique.
The morphing into the mouth closing is pretty.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
It's just
I'm not noticing that.
I'm just caught in the moment of how disturbing it is and how compelling it.
And you know, I didn't notice it in the very beginning either. I only noticed it when John Gator had pointed it out.
And
I was like, I mean, you know, compared to some of the other effects in the movie.
But I'm very caught up in the moment, and you know, just really.
Okay, yeah, this is pretty scary stuff.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's like an alien moment right here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, alien in reverse, basically.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
It's all a dream,
or so we thought, or so we,
or so we're made to think.
Yeah.
Right.
And they sort of repeated this in one of the Animatrix ones, the last one actually, Detective Story. The idea of the...
No, I haven't seen that one yet.
You haven't?
Mm-mm.
Well, I've got it. Maybe we'll watch it later when we're done with this.
I downloaded it, but I didn't really get a chance to watch it.
Yeah. It's actually pretty good. I think it's one of the better ones.
Gotcha.
How many more Animatrixes are going to be released?
Let's see. There are four that have been released now, three online, including the Final Flight of the Osiris, which is on with Dreamcatcher, on
the
big screen.
Computer animated one.
There's one more, Second Renaissance Part 2,
right.
And then the rest of them are going to be released on DVD along with the original.
It's all going to be on one DVD, isn't
it? It is going to be one DVD.
One package, anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, that'd be just really lame if they just bought it every.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that just
no. It's gonna be one DVD with all nine.
Okay.
Commentaries, all that stuff.
Excellent.
With it,
that sounds really neat.
And now we see Trinity again, and you know, I think they've still got the mystery kind of going.
The mystery is
very
working,
much
you know what's going on with all this,
and the gun just gets put on it. And you have no idea why. You're still wondering.
This is very film noir here, I think.
Right. Yes, this is. It's one of the aspects that I was going to bring up.
Very
this
film
is
noir.
Sort of. That's why I mentioned Blade Runner and 12 Monkeys and Dark City, and with my reviews, this sort of fits into the whole new wave of combined science fiction and film noir.
Right.
And which is actually a pretty ingenious and inspired concept.
Yeah.
If anybody who's ever watched classic film noir or modern film noir for that matter, and you know, knowing what could possibly happen in the realm of sci-fi and that. I mean, Philip K. Dick basically combined the two brilliantly in his writings, and no wonder three movies have been inspired by his writings, and all three of them are sort of in that sci-fi noir genre, sort of subgenre, Blade Runner, Imposter, and Minority Report.
What I like about all their gadgets is that they kind of have a, even though you know it's kind of futuristic, they still have this kind of we kind of ad hoc put it together.
Oh yeah,
you know,
I was going to say that.
Yeah.
I was going to
mention
that
quality, which you know makes it seem like they're the rebels. You know, and while you know everybody else has, while the computers have you know the big technology,
everything looks like it was built from scratch.
Which, given that it exists in the Matrix, but not necessarily the real world, it makes sense that would look like that.
Mm-hmm.
This was a rough thing too.
Yeah, I have to admit, in watching it a couple of times in preparation for this, I have grown a little more gained a little more respect for the film that I had. I originally gave the movie a D plus when I graded it back in 1999. Now it would probably go C plus, B minus. I'm sort of on the cover. And I mean, this shot was right out of Blade Runner. In fact, I think it is Blade Runner.
Well, every camera angle, such as, you know, maybe what one like that one on the stairs, and that was all very much
that
inspired
was
by
Vertigo too. That was all classic.
But you know, but I think the primary inspiration for a lot of those camera angles is anime.
Yeah, I mean, anime was a huge influence on this. Obviously, I mean, this is probably the first real live action anime. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, the Wachowski brothers have said that, I mean, this was obviously inspired by anime.
Right, and if you look at their storyboards mm-hmm. and the imagery that they put on there and what they wanted in the movie, it's almost exactly the same.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, when you if you're an anime fan, then, you know, it's and you watch some of the movies, it would be extremely difficult to try to bring some of that stuff to the screen.
Oh yeah,
and I think these guys did a good job, not only visually, but as far as the stories go. When you look at some of the anime stories,
mm-hmm.
it's always, you know, human beings created computers or something like that, yeah. and then they kind of took over. You know, human beings kind of playing God when they're not supposed to. And I think these guys captured the type of stories mm-hmm. and the visual style.
And this is much easier to follow than anime.
Well, depending on the anime.
When I first saw it, it wasn't,
I still don't get
the last 20 minutes of Akira,
but
anyway.
But, yes. But when compared to,
to anime, this is actually kind of similar.
When Dave tried to show me
easier.
Some episodes of Gundam Wing once, I was just lost. Totally.
Gundam Wing's a little rough, but I don't think I got lost with Cowboy
Bebop.
How do you get lost in Cowboy Bebop?
Cowboy Bebop's pretty sweet.
It's not that hard to follow. I mean... Anyway, yeah, talking about anime, I mean, a couple of the movies that I've obviously inspired were the Landmark Akira, which, you know, if you're not a fan of this movie and you've never seen Akira, well, shame on you.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, if you're a fan of anime, well, you've probably seen Akira because it was probably the first one you saw.
Yeah, that a rope tip.
And Akira was one of the obvious inspirations for this. Ghost in the Shell, another great anime, which is probably one of the top two or three I've ever seen.
That's fantastic.
Probably even better than Akira, I think. Funny bit of trivia here. Now, the Internet Movie Database, with regards to The Matrix. Where are we?
While he's finding that, I just want to mention that Lawrence Fishburne's performance in this scene, that was one of his best. I mean, this could have easily been a cheesy scene
mm-hmm.
had it just been Keanu Reeves.
Just about every scene that Lawrence Fishburne in, you know, because he's basically the exposition throughout the whole movie. He's
I think is a big part of the problem with his character.
Uh-huh.
I'll go into that.
But really, I agree with Dave on the fact that, you know, Lawrence Fishburne could have very easily have, you know, but he saved a lot of this exposition and made it pretty interesting.
Yeah, I mean, when the movie goes down, as far as I'm concerned, you know, at its worst moments, and he's in it, he's kind of carrying it,
mm-hmm.
you know, making it happen when it could just be complete crap.
Yeah. Did you know that there are numerous references to Alice in Wonderland and Through the Looking Glass and what Alice found there in The Matrix? Did you know that? I knew that without even having to look it up. I mean, it's laid on so thick that it's just ridiculous.
I love this image right there.
Yeah,
cinematography in this movie is very impressive. Mm-hmm. And it really is. Okay, now time to... This is part of where the movie really started to lose me first time I saw it, and actually subsequent times I saw it, is when Morpheus comes into the picture. Nothing against Lawrence Fishburne, who's a fine actor when he's given really good material. But, you know, people were making Morpheus out to be sort of a hipper than anything equivalent to, like, Gandalf and Obi-Wan Kenobi and any other of these sort of mentor characters in mythology-based movies. To me, he's a pretentious windbag. Just the voice pattern gets on my nerves. You know, the fact that he almost always speaks in these long-winded, sort of ponderous explanations that's like in, you know, obvious level of the Alice in Wonderland references just drive me up the wall. And I just, oh.
Yeah, I can feel that.
This is, for me, this is when the movie really started to lose me when I first saw it in the theater.
I can feel that.
And part of, here's the thing. I mean, you know, I get the fact that he's around, he's basically around for exposition. You know, he's basically, he's the guy who knows what's going on. He is like Gandalf. He is like Obi-Wan Kenobi in that sense. Part of the problem is, in people who have seen, you know, Dark City may or may not agree with me, Kiefer Sutherland is basically the equivalent of Lawrence Fishburne's character in Dark City. And one of the things that I really like about that movie that I think this movie fails really hard on at is the fact that in this movie, you basically need Lawrence Fishburne to just sort of hold Neo's hand and say, and follow him around, and sort of, it's sort of like saying, okay, here's what's going on. With Kiefer Sutherland's character in Dark City, and actually, if you think about with Obi-Wan Kenobi, he, to a certain extent, the Star Wars movies end with, or the original Star Wars movies, and with Gandalf in Lord of the Rings, the main protagonists, such as Neo or Rufus, who own Dark City, are given only information that they need to know. And they basically have to find the rest out for themselves.
Right.
Here, you have Neo basically being spoon-fed all the information. I mean, it, I don't want to say it dumbs it
this
down,
is pretty painful
but...
right here.
I don't want to say it dumbs it down, but it, it's just not a very good piece of storytelling, I think. And I think it's part of the reason this movie sort of lost me. It's like, okay, yeah, let's... And plus, like I was mentioning earlier, about 45 minutes into the movie, you know everything more or less you need to know. And whereas in Dark City, you didn't really know everything until... you weren't even learning everything until, like, the last minutes of the movie, which I thought was one of the more impressive aspects of that movie. And if you haven't seen it, by the way, I highly recommend it. It's one of my favorite films of all time. It's one of the best films I've ever seen. And I think it's a film that really does an excellent job of presenting this sort of story in a way that's unique and
I like the way
surprising.
I like the way you defend your notions on that, Ryan. You defend that really well.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think what makes this movie, I think part of this movie's appeal is that it does have a very rich story, but at the same time, you know, towards the end, we probably should be talking more about the end towards the end, but
yeah.
You know, towards the end, after all the exposition and story has been dished out, it's some of the most innovative action and usage of keeping the audience compelled and wanting to stick with the characters until the end. I think.
Well, that's part of my problem with this movie, in that when you get there, I mean, there are really no surprises after you find out what the Matrix really is.
Mm-hmm.
Once Lawrence Fishburne has already just spelled it out for you, you know, to the T, there's nothing else to really learn for the next hour and a half or so. You know, you're basically just seeing, you know, is Neo the one, which, you know, I can count how many times they mention that in this movie. It's so redundant, it's not even funny. Mm-hmm. You know, and it basically degenerates into an action movie,
mm-hmm.
which, I mean, you know, you could argue is sort of the
but I think
result
that's...
of Joel Silver, great action producer, being the main producer on this movie. But the fact of the matter is, though, is that the story for me is not that great to where here you are, you're 45 minutes into the movie, you basically laid it all out for the main character and for the audience, that there's nowhere else to go from there. You just start doing all these chase sequences, all these action sequences. Is he the one? Isn't he the one? All this stuff. You know, all this stuff that, I don't want to say it seems like filler, just seems that, you know, they decide, okay, well, here's all the story we need. Let's just make some really cool action sequences.
Okay.
And see, one of the things that I really love about Dark City, and I hate to keep bringing this up because it really should get its own commentary, but the fact of the matter is, one of the things I love about Dark City is, you know, you're given some information in voiceover at the beginning, which the director didn't even want there, but you're given enough information to start off with in the first few minutes. And you keep, and that, and the amount of information just keeps building and building and building until even like the last 5-10 minutes of the movie. And here, you know all the information not even halfway into it, and it's like, well, what else is there? That's one of the things that I'm kind of curious about seeing the sequels to this, to see what more they could possibly add to this universe to make it sustain, you know, 6.5 hours or 6 hours, 45 minutes of film.
I feel that, right? I mean, I got that feeling,
I mean,
kind of at the end of the movie is when I had that feeling. And, you know, I mean, I'm definitely with you. It's just, I know they had a story to tell about what is the Matrix, and then I know they had a story to tell about the how you take a regular guy and then make him into the hero, you know?
Yeah.
And so, I mean, how do you balance that? Because, I mean, the whole marketing thing was what is the Matrix?
Yeah.
You know? But the whole story is really kind of about Neo. So, I mean, you know, how do you balance that?
And, you know,
I'm not saying their balance was correct.
That's all right.
You know, I'm just saying that, you know, I mean, they have this universe that they're making the movie in, and they have to explain the universe, but then they got the guy who's the main character, who's got to grow and evolve into, you know, kind of this hero who can almost control the universe, you know. So, I mean, how do you make that happen? I'm not saying
one of the problems I have with the movie, that how they did that was, you basically already know everything you need to know about this character by the time that last action sequence starts. You know, if you haven't figured out he's the one by the time that last action sequence starts, I mean, you haven't been paying attention. Because
mm-hmm.
Lawrence Fishburne and everybody else has hammered it into your brain like 20 times by that point. I mean, you know, it's just very repetitive, very redundant in that sense, in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I think that, you know, they, in the movie, they try to, you know, they try to keep suspense. Is he the one? Is he not in the one? But, I mean, you know, I mean, he's the one.
But, see, the problem that's why there's no suspense in that.
Right. So I'm saying,
should they have even
tried to even do that? Should they have even tried to even make that happen? But then again, I mean, you know, when he met the Oracle, she was saying that, you know, you have to, you are, but it's going to come at a second life almost.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I guess that's part of the story. Okay, he has to die and then be born again as part of the Matrix. Okay, I mean, I feel that. I mean, I'm down. You know, okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right, yeah, I feel that.
But, I mean, I don't know. They, you know, I just have a lot of problems with this story. I don't think it's nearly as original or innovative or as unique as people made it out to be. I mean, there was this great article in Time where they basically point out everything that influenced the Wachowskis in making this film and writing this story. And, you know, it's like, it just sort of pointed to me, it's like, well, look at how unoriginal this is. I mean, you know,
Yeah, I mean, the way I thought about it is it almost looks like they were kind of taking some of the best ideas from a lot of sci-fi movies, a lot of anime movies, a lot of action, you know, martial arts movies, and kind of throwing them into one movie. So, I mean, you're obviously not going to end up with an original story.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's everything in the kitchen sink
right. In
this movie, including the kitchen sink.
Right. And so, I mean, you're not going to end up with an original story. You're probably not going to end up with even that great of a story. I mean, you know from just the beginning that this is not going to be sort of an Oscar-winning story movie. There's not going to be some Oscar-winning acting performances. I mean, you already know that.
Although it kind of
very much deserved an Oscar for special effects.
It did win an Oscar for visual effects, which
it did.
I don't know. I was partial episode one, yeah. But in all of the technical categories,
I was partial to episode one as far as visual effects were concerned at first as well, but then I did give this movie another look and another look and another look. And you know, the visual effects in this are much more organic than episode one, I think, even though I think episode one was absolutely groundbreaking. 99 was an astonishing year for visual effects.
Right. For film in general. I mean, not just for visual effects, for film in general. There were a lot of classic, innovative films in that year.
But, you know, here you have, this is the first time we ever saw Bullet Time. This is the first time we ever saw...
This is the first time
we ever saw like a live action anime movie, and that just I think what was but
just as a quick note, this is when the story is actually being told, because I know
and this is where it lost me in theaters. I mean, I'm just sitting back here and I'm like, I mean, I was
like you are
half now? Asleep when I saw this in the theaters because of the fact that it's like, okay, now we're in a slow section.
I mean, you know, the dialogue is definitely not the most riveting part of this movie at this point in time.
Yeah.
I kind of like the shots they're doing, some of the like the one that you just saw where it came down and into them sitting at the couch or sitting in the chairs right here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I kind of like that. A couple of ideas, you know, they scorch the sky, et cetera, et cetera. You know, a couple of ideas I'm liking. This is definitely one of the slowest parts of the movie.
Yeah.
They are pumping out technical information here that is pretty informative. That's going to run throughout the rest of this movie and probably the other movies.
A lot of this is so. Why do I like this? These moments of exposition is because they're. I don't know. I find them so disturbing and compelling that
it is pretty disturbing.
Disturbing, but you know, and I wonder which one I am in there. But yeah, but yeah, I mean, it's disturbing, but not to the point where it I think turns off a lot of people in the audience.
Right.
I think people want a little shock value in there to keep you. This is probably.
That's
skirting the edge of just downright. But anyway,
I mean that's some good ideas. I mean there's all throughout in there. There were some good ideas. And whether those ideas are stolen or not, you know, they're kind of all put in there in one place, and that actually made something really work.